Port Otago Strategic Asset Review. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Nick. And we welcome some guests to the table for this. So Nick's staying here and he's bringing up two lovely people from PwC.
And we do record this and it goes on our website as well. Liz was going to. Are you going to bring this up?
Where is it?
Is the laptop up?
Yep, it's on. Or it's on screen.
Yeah.
So,
I've done a very good report.
Can I welcome to the table Nick and Carl Blanchard? Thanks, Carl. And Ben Ford. Thank you. I tell you what, you two make me feel old. Quite scary. It's all in your hands,
right,
dear people.
Well, thank you.
And then I'm going to give you a chance to talk and explain, and then for questions, and then we'll attend to the recommendations, which is the receiving and a noting.
Fair enough. So,
okay.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for the opportunity of presenting here today. What we have before you is a sort of a fulsome report, but we're going to perhaps dwell on the executive summary. It's probably the easiest thing to sort of work our way through in the time that we've got available. By way of introduction, I run the infrastructure, property and capital part of PwC in New Zealand, and Ben works closely with me on the sorts of matters that we have before you today. And just by way of background, we've just completed a similar exercise about a year ago for the Hawke's Bay Regional Council in relation to their relation to their port asset. So in terms of the paper, the scope of what we have been asked to do is set out in the first few pages. We have based our conclusions on publicly available information from the port. We have looked at historical returns both from the port entity and the commercial property entity embedded within the port. We have looked at dividends and we have looked at potential ownership alternatives going forward. And to be frank, the ownership alternatives are really at a very high level in a very early stage and not the main focus of this report, despite what you may have read in the Otago Daily Times today. Given the nature of this type of exercise, there will be invariably questions that you have outside of the scope of this report. You know, we can give some indicative views today. More work may be required, Nick. I think that's probably the logical answer to those questions. I think before we get into the main detail, which I'm going to get Ben to run through, I think it is worth noting that every company is different, and every port is different to compound the issue. In the case of Port Otago, it has a large commercial land entity embedded within it, as mentioned before. Obviously, has a working port as well. That working port is principally an export port with a mixture of containers and bulk cargoes. And our observation would be that over the last sort of few years, it's been relatively capital intensive, so a lot of money has been spent on capex, but our observation would be that it's probably over that hump, so that should mean more free cash flows. So as I said, I'm going to get Ben to sort of talk through the main conclusions, the substantial piece. I'm going to come back after he has got through that and dividends to talk about ownership options very, very briefly. And then questions.
Now, Dungeness, shall we go through the report and then do questions, or you do mind if there are questions that come up under different headings? What would you like?
We're relaxed.
You're relaxed?
We can do whatever.
So we might even do questions page by page, if you like, as we go through.
If you want, yeah.
So the next one is, do you want to stay on background and scope?
I think they were proposing just to talk through the executive summary pages only, not all the pages of the report.
You mean executives is the ones in colour?
No, the first section is like 4-5 pages, which is the executive summary pages.
Okay.
Yep.
So we can talk through those and take questions if you like. Yeah.
Beaut. Okay, let's go for it.
Thank you, Carl. Good afternoon. In our review of the historical performance, we've taken the port's reported property and port earnings before interest and tax. So that's as stated in the annual reports. We haven't made any assumptions ourselves as to shared costs, etc. What our analysis shows is that property has outperformed the port over the last 10 years, even before revaluations are considered. However, the port has performed steadily over that period and has grown steadily as well. On an earnings before interest and tax basis, property now contributes more than the port operations after sales from land developments are factored in, and has grown at a strong growth rate of 6.6% over that period. In terms of returns, we've again reviewed the port's stated return on assets in its annual reports and compared those returns against its stated targets in those reports. The port returns, as opposed to property returns, have been consistently around the target over that period, albeit lower in a number of years. This reflects a strong regional competition that the port experiences from Timaru, Southport and Lyttelton, arguably more competition than is experienced in the North Island.
Is that right? What's it?
Returns are lower than Timaru when property returns are excluded from the port's numbers, but in line or greater when included. On a total basis, the port's returns are around the upper quartile of all New Zealand ports and above its immediate peers as well when property revaluations are factored in. And as Carl alluded to, the asset mix is quite different from a number of its competitor ports, so arguably should be factored in. In terms of dividends, the port pays out a dividend based on a normalised operating surplus basis, so this excludes unrealised revaluations and therefore is a more accurate or better proxy for cash. The port has paid out dividends of between 7 and 7.7 million over the last 10 years. Importantly, it has paid out ordinary dividends as agreed with the council through the LTP process, but as the chart in the pack shows, it has been below its target guidance or implied target guidance as set out in the SOI in a number of years. The port has also paid out special dividends when requested from council, and these over the 10-year period total around 17 million. In our analysis, we also considered what a good metric or measure for dividend payment should be, and we proposed that the port could consider a dividend metric which factors in the differences in capex and depreciation, as this would be a better proxy for cash and the cash available for distributions. So we've shown that there as a the adjusted dividend range, including stay-in-business capex. We also, given the port's current level of debt, which is at the last annual report, had debt being 10% of total capital, which is less than a number of other New Zealand ports, the port could consider a special dividend or increasing future ordinary dividends, but in this analysis you would need to factor in future capex requirements, which was out of our scope, therefore we haven't factored that in.
All right, I'm going to open up for questions, and I've got one on my right.
Michael.
I can briefly touch on ownership if you want, or we can just
cover. Can we do ownership after we've just questioned on these ones?
Yep.
It's
good.
Michael, then it's. Are you going to be questioning on these things? Yes, or not ownership? Yes.
I mean, obviously, a number of us have questioned the scale of the dividend each year and considered it incredibly light in comparison to what would normally be practice. I want to understand this. They've paid down debt over the last 10 years. And I think from what I can work out, they've used their profits from Chalmers property, or their property, to pay down debt to the 10% that you're talking about right at the end. When you talk about 10%, I'm not aware of any other port in New Zealand, perhaps you could point that to me, where it's 10%. I mean, are you aware of any other port that has its capital, its debt versus its capital at 10% ratio?
There is one, and there's good reason for that. not Westport. So, you know, the Napier port IPO, they raised primary capital to pay off all of their debt, but they had a large capex program, New Wharf 6. The other port that has very low debt is Lyttelton Port, and you know that is earthquake proceeds, and they are spending that on remediation of their port. So,
bring it up.
So and Centre Port is in a very, very similar spot, earthquake, all of that sort of stuff. If you're asking the question on a normalised basis, you know, would we think a 10% debt level is the right number? We would say, look, you know, there is scope to raise the debt.
So when you are looking at that graph there, what would you consider is reasonable? So it's stay in business capex. What would that put the dividend at each year? Is that 12 million or over 12 million?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think, you know, if I was sort of...
It's a range between 10 and 12 and a half.
I'll just clarify that we've used simplified assumptions with regard to staying business assumptions. So we've taken the average over 10 years of all capex, and, of course, there's some capex that would be maintenance, some that would be growth, et cetera. And, you know, that's just a factor of the fact that we haven't got we've got publicly available information and it doesn't disclose down to that level. So I guess to determine what a dividend band should be, you really need to investigate that capex in detail.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But you've done it by putting that in the graph.
Yes.
And it tells me 10 to 12.5 million is your little line. Is that right? Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes, which is similar to the in fact, and lower in some years to the guidance in the SOI.
Now, on their capex, on the expenditure they've done, particularly on, for example, getting the channel deeper for larger draft ships and things like that, are they paying that money out of the capital from Chalmers Property, or are they borrowing it over the lifetime of the particular project?
Look, they will be used, you know, because Chalmers Property is part of the group. It's a consolidated, will get consolidated into the accounts. There is a bit of recycling happening within Chalmers Property. So as there are cash proceeds coming out through realisation, they are being used for development. There is net cash that will be coming in. It, you know, will be mixed with all the other cash within the port, and that will either be used on capex within the port, which, you know, we think has largely come to an end, or being paid in dividends, or being used to reduce debt.
One last question,
please.
I noticed that you didn't have, well, I don't know if you had the cooperation or not, but you didn't have access to the Port of Otago financial accounts currently. You've relied exclusively upon public documents, as I understand it, to make this report. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did you ask the Port of Otago for their current finances or any questions in the preparation of this report?
So we have had a discussion with the port. The basis of that discussion was in relation to publicly available information. That's where that's that was the basis of our scope.
So you didn't ask them for any information?
Well, they our scope was based on publicly available information.
Thank you. Just as I hand over to Hilary, that question about scope, who set the scope?
That was previous council.
The terms of reference and what was to be included was set by council in March last year when we took those.
Thank you very much.
Part of that, given that this was always going to be a public document, we were always very clear when the RFPs went out to appoint a consultant that it would be based on publicly available information rather than any future forecast information which is not publicly available.
Thank you, love. Hilary.
It doesn't say that in the scope that was agreed to last year, just to expect.
Gary.
I know this is going to bore the wits out of the rest of you, but I've got some questions that I sent in advance
so these people
would be ready to answer.
I'm going to say this to both you and Michael. When you're asking questions and you're going to go on to say three or four, can you flick them up to it? Can you just look at my eyes so that we can do it? Because otherwise we take over and I have no control of the meeting.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, Hilary.
Sorry, you knew. There's quite clearly two different parts of Port Otago. Or there's Port Otago and there's the port activities and Chalmers Properties. You haven't separated them out. I mean, you've separated them out in describing them to us very nicely in all sorts of ways. But when you've proposed an ownership model, you haven't separated them out. And when you've looked at what we might do, and when you've compared them with, like, Timaru, you're saying we're doing well compared with other ports, but you're acknowledging that that's as a result, or I think what you're saying is acknowledging that that's as a result of the rentals, the leasehold, the property stuff. So why is it that you haven't given us an option of something that puts Chalmers Properties in one pile and doing something with it, and the port activities in another pile?
Yeah, so in terms of, again, the scope, our scope didn't go that far.
Well, it suggested ownership models, and it did suggest
ownership models, and I think when we talk in the last page of the executive summary, there is some commentary that you could do that, but we were looking at the broad ownership models. We have done no detailed analysis on what those ownership models would be because we would have to go and do complete valuations and that type of stuff.
So there's no... I mean, the scope does quite clearly allow for that. You could have. It says a review of ownership models. And clearly, because they're so different, they're chalk and cheese, and they're not related to each other. And because they're not related to each other, doing the same thing, whatever you do, and those four options describe four quite clear options, but doing the same thing with each of those options with two completely chalk and cheese things...
It's a possibility, and we raise it as a possibility. We just haven't done any detailed analysis on the ownership options. We've been asked to identify what the ownership options are, which we have done. I think when we look at other considerations, I don't know what page it is in this, it's on the board there, structural separation is mentioned.
Yep.
The final paragraph says, in addition, it's worth noting that each business may attract different investor interests and therefore may benefit from sales separately.
Under other considerations, structural separation.
Yes, but essentially there's no, I mean... That would an obvious thing to do would be to... Anyway, that's an option that isn't canvassed by these papers, is what you're saying.
Sorry to just come back around on that. I mean, it is considered. It's not considered in detail because we haven't considered any of the ownership options in detail. We've considered it at high level, and there is a next step that we would need to do to go and consider any of these things in detail.
Is the...
Hilary, question three. Right. I'm just alerting you to coming back in through the chair.
Sorry?
I'm alerting you to ask your questions through the chair, please.
Through the chair. Do you see major issues separating out Chalmers properties from the port activity?
Based on our sort of view of the data, I think the answer to that would be I don't see major issues. It's as a separate subsidiary. There may be costs, additional costs associated with separation because you'd have to duplicate systems and various other things, but, you know, it is a separate subsidiary.
And through the chair?
What?
Last question.
Good.
The dividend target, There's discussion in here about the long-term plan and fitting in with the long-term plan. But our basic document between us and Port Otago is the statement of intent, the 50-70, where the 50-70% comes from. And this nice graph here suggests that that is not relating to what they've been doing for us, really. I mean, it's as if that doesn't exist. It may be within a long-term plan, but it isn't related to that. So rather than dealing with the long-term plan, would it be better to actually enforce, for want of a better word, the SOI, in fact, than change the SOI to being perhaps more in line with what you're suggesting, and actually saying, please do this, and we mean it this time, not just here's our intent, ignore it?
I think, the thing about the SOI and the long-term plan is that they are documents effectively negotiated between the Regional Council and the port, and so therefore, you do have a say in what goes in the SOI in terms of requests to the board. And then the long-term plan is obviously the result of that process. Based on the work that we have done, the dividends that you have been receiving are in the long-term plan. They are the numbers that you have been getting.
SOI is our agreement with the port.
Yes, that's right. And so it's a negotiation. Yeah.
Okay. It's a result of a negotiation.
Hilary, there's a fairness to other people around the table. Okay, you've done about 10 minutes of questioning. Can I go to Kate, Michael Deaker, Gary, Andrew and Brian? Kate.
Thank you. Kia ora, and through the chair. mine are similar questions but at a higher level. And just want to understand, any other companies or port companies that own a substantial amount of land, are you aware of any, that is not core land for the port?
Look, I would say that all port companies vary.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this is at the at one end of the spectrum in terms of the
centre port, Wellington.
Yes, but I think this is at the this would be at the extreme. I think the centre port land is a little bit questionable at the moment, just with an earthquake.
Buildings go up and come down. Yes,
but it's at the port generally. The land at centre port. Are you giving us?
But it's not for port purposes.
No. The purpose of the act when it first came out, my understanding was that the land was important to the port. Now they've gone off and bought other land, nothing to do with the port, to generate money, which is also part of their...
Thank goodness.
Yeah, this is at one end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. My subsequent question, which is sort of in two parts, both for governance and transparency, I'm interested to get a board mix that worries about the port and generating money, but also worrying about property development, because they seem to me to be very, very different director mix. So that's at one level.
Yeah.
But at the other level, at the moment, as you've told us, the port operation has been, while it's under capital development, lifted up by the Chalmers properties, which is absolutely fine. Again, I'm not being critical of it, but I'm wondering if it's transparently obvious to how well the company is doing, if that's happening, in comparison, and how transparent that's seen in governance measures.
Yes, I can't comment for the measures that the board have, obviously. the information that's in this report has come from, you know, basically any reports. So this is public information.
Oh, sorry. Is that normal? That is it best practice that you one is propping the other one up? It's great financially, but as far as transparency of how successful the businesses are.
Yeah, well, I think the thing I would say, both of those businesses have different risk profiles.
Mm.
So, you know, if you step back and if you just sort of step back and looked at it, you would say that the port business has been pretty stable. Has been noted modestly growing over time. Probably has a lower cost, much lower cost of capital than the real estate business.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, has been subject to more competition over recent years, principally through the Port of Tauranga acquisition of part of Port of Timaru. So it's probably, as ports go, you know, Auckland, Tauranga, if we take them out of the mix for a moment, probably the most susceptible to competition of the rest of the ports in within New Zealand. The real estate business, if we look at real estate just generally in New Zealand over the last 10 years, those businesses have done very well. And they have had large valuation gains. And as a consequence, it's not surprising to me that they actually, you know, this business has done well within the confines of the group. But they, as we have seen in history, they do go up. And they do go down, and we do have some revaluation losses in that 2012 period within Chalmers Property.
Thank you.
So they're quite different risk profiles.
Yep.
Thank you. Can I call on Michael Deacon?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair, and thank you for the clarity of your report and the clarity of what you're saying to us now. I appreciate both of those. I'm interested in your graph under dividend policy options, which indicates that, as we knew anyway, that but you've kind of made it graphically clear that the dividends could well have been higher than they have been in recent years, and the graph trends upwards. We own Port Otago on behalf of the people of our whole region, and we've been increasingly proud of their success as a port company and as a property company combined in one operation with very successful governance boards. But it does create a dilemma for us in that only, I think, 16% of the money that it costs to keep this regional council going and growing comes from general rates, because this council has always had the philosophy that our ownership on behalf of the people of Otago is to relieve them of rate burden. But now it's got to the point, and it has done for some years now, of creating a kind of risk for us in that, for example, in Dunedin City, where property values are going up more than they are nationally, still, if I own a $500,000 house in this city, the rates I pay, the general rates, are $100 to this council. Now, why is that? It's because we own a port company which owns a property business. You've mentioned Centreport and Lyttelton and the amount of money they're spending on rebuilding their asset. Now, it's occurred to us around this table that if we had, and we could have at 5 o'clock today, a similar earthquake that did a hell of a lot of damage to Lyttelton and subsequently to Wellington, where would we be? Where would our ratepayers be? Boy, would their rate bills go through several ceilings. So we have deliberately as a council tried to minimise the input of dividend into our rating formulae. I'm saying all this not because you don't know it. I'm sure when you looked at all the numbers, you saw how low our general rate was.
Mm.
You worked out the reason for it.
Mm.
Now you're pointing out the dividends could have been significantly higher, both now and in the future. Yet we've got this dilemma. There's a risk involved in doing that. It's a matter of eggs and baskets. And we have, I think, probably 15 eggs in a basket designed for 8, if you follow my analogy. And now, am I right in saying all that? And
no,
what would you see as the way out of that dilemma? Lessening the risk on our low-paying ratepayers while maintaining our guardianship of a significant regional asset for the benefit of everybody who lives in the region.
Look, it's a really, as you say, it's a dilemma. You know, you could and probably should spend some time with the board on dividend policy and gearing policy. You know, what does that do? It makes you more reliant, I think, which is your point. The only thing I can say and share it was part of the debate that the Hawke's Bay folk had. You know, they didn't like the risks of all eggs in one basket. They had an immediate capex problem, which forced them to do something. But you know, they did take proceeds out of their IPO, and they did create a balanced equities fund. So you're diversifying your risk, and that's so having a discussion with the chair of Hawke's Bay Regional Council is probably a useful thing to do at some point.
So just subsequently, if I may, Madam Chair, what you seem to be suggesting is that if we were to require the port company to pay dividends along the lines of what you're suggesting they could be doing, we could use that inflow of cash as an investment opportunity in some other productive enterprise.
You could do, or you know, if you decided to look at your ownership options, you could again take some of that money as well. So you've got a combination of way of thinking of things.
I'll wave a flag saying I'm not interested in ownership options. I want to see us maintain ownership of the whole shebang.
Well, you could. You could take that surplus money and you could put that into a fund.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much. That's good.
Thank you, Michael. Gary, followed by Andrew, followed by Brian, followed by Kevin. And I might have a question.
Two brief questions. Thank you, Madam Chair, if that's right. First question, it worries me when you've highlighted right from the start that your scope has been limited. And are you comfortable that if this council is going to be having some dividend discussions with the port, that your report is robust enough and the detail in here is robust enough on the basis of that limited scope that the detail here is accurate?
Answer to that is yes.
Yes.
In relation to dividends, and the key question is a future capex question. That is the key question, but you know that's something that you're able to well talk to the port about, Nick, I would think. Yeah.
Second question, Madam Chair. Your graph, as Councillor Deaker has just indicated, shows over a relatively short period of time the indicative range as a rising plane, reaching a point for 2019 at sort of about $13.5 million, if you went to the upper end of that range. If you were to predict 4 or 5 years beyond that, would you see that rising plane reaching a plateau at this point and then plateauing and continuing on, or would you see that rising plane continuing rising?
And we just haven't had access to future business plans, but I think, you know, in the discussions that officers are able to have with the port, I imagine you do get that access, Nick, and, you know, having those discussions with the company is, I think, the way forward. You know, I would observe around the port, you know, it obviously is on a constrained land holding. It probably is thinking of issues of automation to make land use more efficient. That obviously has capex associated with it. But, you know, I think what we would see, you know, absent viruses and various other impacts on trade, a continuation of trade on an upward trajectory going forward, which has to be to the benefit of the port.
Thank you. Thanks, Gary. Andrew.
My question has been asked. Thank you.
Andrew, you're a saint. Brian.
Oh, just for you.
thank you for your report. Enjoyed reading your report. We've been talking about this type of thing for quite a while now and thinking about it. My question really is, what is the next step? It seems to me you've given a general overview, and there's, and of course, you know, a number of councils have talked about, you know, what if or what's more detail on this. I suspect the next step is for us as a council to actually determine what our expenditure needs are over the next 5 years, 10 years, and then we can basically find out what type of lump of money is actually required, so that we look at your report with some type of realistic context. And I'm in, like, Councillor Deaker's camp. You know, ideally, we can keep the existing structure and fund this bubble out of dividends. You've talked about in your report that the dividend historically has been modest and its potential and this type of thing. Councillor Calvert has previously, you know, given the idea, can we actually sell off, or can we encourage the port to look at maybe selling items off, you know, maybe the odd property off to fund that dividend, or do we go for a low interest loan, or is it a mix without actually having to fundamentally sell Chalmers or the port? So, but and also you've said in your report that the port is historically invested and is in reasonably good nick and competitive and so forth. But anyway, there's my question. It's the question now for us to actually to do our homework. What is that expenditure bubble? So then we can then look with some realism about some of these options.
Just perhaps picking up on that, you know, our advice on these sorts of, yes, you should do that anyway. Our advice would always be entities which you have control over, which you clearly do here, they should have an appropriate capital structure for what they do. And so what we see at the moment is probably room to adjust that capital structure, because that, you know, an appropriate capital structure puts the right disciplines on management to deliver. So that would be our advice.
Thank you, Jim. You're right. Kevin?
Just if we go back to page 7, which is page 89 on our, we actually do see there that our return from port activities are comparable with our main competitor, Prime Port Timaru, which shows that if we just look at the port part, well, that's going pretty good. And we've probably been very lucky that the board decided some years ago to invest in property where they have, and we've made some very good dividends on that. And I suppose that the only benefit of having this company here, that it is in fact run efficiently, and that it does return us a dividend, and is not a burden on the ratepayer. So with that in mind, I'm probably saying that low debt is not necessarily a bad thing, providing that it does not lead to inefficiencies. So this dividend component that we have, by demanding a higher dividend for the people of Otago, would that perhaps give us the opportunity to ensure that we are continually gaining efficiencies at the port to ensure that they can provide that dividend, yet keep their debt low?
Yeah, so look, there are a variety of ways of addressing that question. And, you know, companies, you know, what we would generally say is, you know, you should right-size your debt, and the debt level should, you know, take into account a variety of sensitivities that could occur over time. So you don't want to be in the situation as an owner to put money in. So in other words, the debt can't be too high, as has been the case in ports of Auckland over time. Equally, you don't want it to be too low either. You do have flex around your dividend, and effectively what the company has been doing over time is paying that sort of 7 to 7.5, 7.7, and flexing their dividend policy every so often with special dividends when it becomes obvious that they need to pay it. So, you know, we think there's opportunities here for you to look at both things.
And so just, Madam Chair, but why I'm saying it, looking at debt, and if we look at the world environment at the moment, if this a coronavirus type thing, it dramatically affects the port, which I dare say it could, the beauty of having limited debt or very low debt, we can still, and then we have the flexibility then to ensure that company's still performing. We may not necessarily yield the dividend, but at least we're not also having to pay off, to a system pay debt.
Correct. I mean, you do have to, as part of your sensitivity analysis, think about what shocks could happen. The counter vote, just the one last point I would say, debt is incredibly cheap at the moment. So,
incredible.
It's incredibly cheap. Yeah, yeah, so, 10-year governments, just to give you a sense, which is where you would be borrowing more or less through the local government funding authority, is around
1%.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's
crazy.
Yeah. Particularly amazing if you're older and you've got all your.
I remember. I'm older than you think I am.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Okay, I've got. You okay, Kevin?
Yeah. Thanks very much.
I've just got one question. It's a comparison to Port Timaru. Is the comparison about the comparable efficiencies of both ports, or is it about the hinterland of both ports and what they supply to the port?
Yeah. Look, that's a good question because If you think about catchment, which is I think your point,
yep.
Effectively logs will go to the closest port, and containers will go to
port.
Yeah, effectively subject to rail, yep. To rail charges. So what you have coming through this port are effectively Fonterra shipments from Edendale. And you've got Clandeboy shipments going into Port of Timaru. Now, back in a few years ago, port was getting containers out of Timaru, and so the competitive environment with Port of Tauranga, I think it's had a marked impact on this port. Albeit the port is still being able to gradually improve its earnings out of the port.
Second question to the chair. Is that because Tauranga is more efficient, has got more capital investment up there in terms of how it moves containers around?
But they have supply chain investment, so they've got deals with Fonterra.
Yep.
And just given the size of them, they understand the shipping lines
right.
Very well.
Okay.
So they've been able to get ships that squeeze into Timaru. They've been able to get shipping lines to get in there. So it's much more competitive here than it has been for some time.
Thank you very much for that. Now, darlings, this is a questioning session rather than an arguing session. Yes, young girl.
Thank you. One little question, which is, you said before that the asset mix is different from the others, right? But that's not a bad thing, is it?
Not necessarily, and I think one of the questions, and because ultimately you appoint a board to administer these assets, and the board needs to form a view on what's best for the business. There've been plenty of businesses that have had picking up Councillor Deaker on your comment about having all of your eggs in one basket that. Have not gone so well over time, and I think this would be the company's argument. What the commercial property business does is provide some cushion to other things. It doesn't mean that you are not, as an owner, focused on what's happening in both parts of that business. You definitely should be, and should be asking questions about both parts of those businesses.
Okay. People, are there any further questions to the people at the end of the table? Nick, do you think that, because we're going to say in this, we receive the report and we note that staff will report back to the Finance Committee regarding information and options provided in the report. Do you need any more opinion from us? Hang on, sweethearts, just a minute.
No, but where I'll put that as well, whether that's a formal paperback in public or whether Council wishes to have a workshop to discuss these options. I think Councillor Scott's point was very valid, that before Council sort of moves too far forward, I think we need to have a very clear idea about what our requirements are. And in the, if you look, we've already got things happening in the annual plan space around some increased dividends, but you know, there's a big difference between an increased dividend amount on an ongoing basis versus, you know, a sell down of or an IPO that might generate, you know, in excess of $200 million. There's, before those sort of discussions are had, I think the question has to be asked, what is council's actual requirements? Because we could very well be solving a problem that we don't have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's another page, Madam Chair. There's one more page.
Oh, okay. I'll come to that in a minute. Just want to clarify, do you want us to clarify and giving back to you whether we want a workshop or a paper or both?
Well, as I said there, that the recommendation is to receive the report, and then I'd recommend that staff report. We'll look through it in more detail and report back with our views. If council's got a view on how that would they'd like that to be done, or they might prefer a workshop before there's a formal report back, it could give some sort of indication to that.
Gary's just reminded us there's another page. Gary, and then Hilary, can I just deal with this? There's another page. Does anyone want to ask questions about that?
Good.
Well, if not...
Is that the ownership page, Gary?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just thought we were working through the executive summary, and we were.
We sort of gone in and out of that page several times.
Do you mean that page there on what the
other considerations?
Yeah, the ownership discussion.
Yeah. Okay. Hilary, and then Michael.
I've got a resolution that I've sent through to Liz to just what if we're getting into talking about what we might be going to do next.
Yes.
So is it just for now, or are we wanting to talk about this first?
I haven't seen it. She's just going to bring it up. Just while she's doing that, Michael, what did you have to say?
I was going to make the point that this is just the start of discussion.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
And first of all, well done. For a lot of us sitting around this council table, we've wanted this issue discussed for some time, and it's now... crystallised itself. I'd hate to put in a workshop, Marion. I'd hate to hide this discussion away from the council, the communities that we're serving. It is a community asset, and I think that it's a discussion that would be better
in
for
the public
that input.
Okay.
And I think that the next course of action, I haven't seen what Hillary's motion might be.
It's turning up there.
I'd be very keen on us all, because although Nick put this out there, we said last year for those councillors who were here, Marion, we didn't really have an input as councillors into what we wanted PwC to talk about. And so councillors here will remember that. We need now, if we're going to have that discussion and say now, off you go and do it. So I'd really like a paper to come back, actually, next round, and it should probably go to finance, actually.
Have you had a look at this?
No, but I'm assuming that says that, does it?
Sort of, yep.
And then we can all have that discussion about what we want to see in any further research that our council needs to see. But we need that discussion, Marion, in some structured form.
I'm just trying to read this through the back of my head. So this is asking, just so I get all the acronyms right, that we go to finance and what? Finance and what?
Finance.
Just finance.
Finance, sorry.
Oh, okay, to F and S. It was going to be M and S. To finance, to consider the next steps of the review, if any, including setting the strategic role of Port Otago to ORC, considering moral and legal role of what? Chalmers Properties to Port Otago and ORC. CCO is?
Council controlled.
Organisation.
To be honest with you.
The opportunity cost of investing elsewhere through Chalmers Properties rather than within Otago, and separating Chalmers Properties and port operations. Actually, I think that really all those things get subsumed by the bottom one. Okay. Now. Before I accept this motion, okay, have I a second? Just before I go any further, what did you want to say?
Yes, I just wanted to give you some advice on the motion. My suggestion would be that even just popping these four bullet points in is taking you along a path which is further than you need to go right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So we just need the first sentence, actually.
The council send a review to the finance committee to consider next steps of the review.
Any review into the Port of Otago.
Every council fall out of it.
That's all you need, Hilary. And then you can add anything in there you like.
Okay, just seeing the scope that seemed to include ownership things and didn't.
Yeah, but you can put all that in there yourself.
Okay.
And plus any others that we want to put in.
Is that all right, people? Yes. Yeah. So we have a mover for this. Hilary was a mover. Do I have a seconder for this?
I'm happy to second it just on one condition.
Yep.
That you include next steps of the review, including a workshop. Because I think it's really important. Nick's alluded to it and Brian's alluded to thinking about our requirements going forward. We're coming up to next year LTP, etc. So an opportunity in the appropriate forum to tease out those requirements in terms of a dividend amount.
Okay, how I'm going to handle that, this discussion, is you're going to move that as an amendment.
Okay.
And can I have a seconder to what this young man said? Kevin, are you putting up your hand? Right. Do you want to speak
seconded.
To it?
No, yep. Second.
You just seconded.
Seconded the amendment.
Do you want us to put the amendment?
I'm seconding the amendment. Sorry.
Which is
Andrew's
amendment, which is adding a workshop to that.
Yeah. I'll second the motion as stated there.
Okay. So I've got the motion and then I've got the
amendment.
I want to deal with the amendment first. Are there any people want to discuss the amendment? Young lady?
I just want to discuss the whole thing. Because what I found from reading...
I always feel as though I'm in control of this meeting.
So, and I'm not taking that away. I read this document and it was very reassuring for me. I might be naive, but it was really reassuring for me. And the only thing that I felt needed considering was exactly what you said, Hilary, that the strategic direction, what we want to get out of this. Michael explained that nicely for me. You guys have... nicely put that through. So I'm pretty happy with where it's going. Where I'm going with this, I don't want any more pressure on the finance department. It's almost like this can go sort of on back burner for much later in the year before LTP, but not any great hurry. I don't know.
Did you want a timeline for that? We haven't set a timeline, actually.
We'll just leave it to the committee.
Committee. I just don't feel like putting at a time when we're trying to do all these other things, this doesn't seem that important.
Yeah,
the Finance Committee sets its agenda by the staff in consultation with the finance chairs, and so they can doubtless
Look at the workload.
Look at the workload. And
okay, so we're back to the... Yes, young man.
Well, the only thing I would add, just considering Alexa's points, is that at no stage has this council sat down and discussed the level of dividend going forward beyond... 2021 or 21-22. So that makes me a little bit nervous from a governance point of view. There's been conversations with the chair and the chair of the board, but we haven't collectively as a group decided going forward.
I haven't done
Well, that's because we don't know what money is required.
Stay in order, stay in order.
Sorry, the chief executive, I beg your pardon, the chief executive of this organisation and the chairman of Port Otago.
Oh, I guess you think that.
Sorry, and I think the governance arm should have a discussion about our long-term requirements in terms of a dividend from Port Otago.
And you would like that to be in the security of not in public?
Well, initially, anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the amendment, and I think it's fairly clear. Mm-hmm. It's been moved. Yeah. All those in favour of Andrew's amendment, which was seconded by Kevin, say aye.
Aye.
And against?
No.
I think it's carried. So we go down to the substantive motion, which is moved by Hilary, and it's got Andrew's bit in it, and it's seconded by that young man, Brian. Any discussion needed?
Yes, sorry, can I just clarify? Can I just clarify the motion at the moment doesn't make any sense? It should consider the next steps of the review of the Port of Otago.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay. Council said that. Send the review to Finance Committee to send the next steps of review and conduct a workshop to work through dividends and other issues. Fair enough, people? All those in favour of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carried. Hey, can I thank you people down here? Do you want to swap jobs?
Oh, no,
thank you very much. People, we've got two things on the agenda before we're going to take a break.
Thank you.
Okay, and the two things that are on the agenda are this. Okay, the two things that are on the agenda are the recommendations of committees, and first of all, they are the recommendations of the Finance Committee of 26 February 2020, yeah. And these are just a moving and what is it? What am I going to do with these? Council should consider a resolution adopting the recommendations made by the Finance Committee. You know, we make all these recommendations in the committee. We are now accepting them. Would somebody like to move that?
Move, Madam Chair.
Move, Kate. Seconded.
No, move, Kate.
Kate, seconded. Andrew, all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, carried. Thank you. And then we're up to this one. I want to do this before we break. The next part of the session is going into, what the hell would it going into? Deemed permits and plan change. The resolution is, and it hasn't got a mover and it hasn't got a seconder. And I'll state quite clearly that, I don't mind if it's lost, that the public be excluded from the following items under Lagoima, and it's the water permits plan change. Is there a mover or a seconder for that?
I move that it goes into public.
No, it's the reverse, darling. That you go into private.
Ah, right.
Madam Chair, just from clarification perspective for myself, and I suppose for...
You can vote on this. You can...
It's a procedural motion. Acknowledging the conflict and the Auditor General's outcome, but I expect that I can vote...
It's a procedural motion.
...ability to...
Absolutely. So, is that the thing I'm understanding? You're asking me to vote on this particular motion?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, first of all, that lady there, and then that young man.
Just a question then, is there anything that we're not aware of or that the staff think we should consider about putting it in public excluded?
Okay, can I answer that question? Because I did some work myself as soon as I saw an email from Michael, and I went online and did some work and looked at a report from a, what the hell do you call them, one of those offices up in Wellington.
Audit office?
No, it wasn't audit, it was somebody else. Anyway, was it somebody else?
I mean, ombudsman.
Ombudsman, okay. And the case against... the case about always going into exclusion is very wobbly, not necessarily needed for this, particularly since we're going to notify it in 3 days.
And particularly if we requested a call-in too, which makes a difference to that.
Yeah, maybe,
It probably answers my question because I just wanted to hear from the Chief Executive... Yeah.
Just hang up for a minute.
The only thing I would say is that I, from recollection, there's some legal advice attached to the paper.
That's right.
Is there, darlings?
It's not very.
Well, it is legal advice, and I would prefer that you did not waive privilege, and so I just ask that you consider it.
Point of clarification?
Hang on, can I just get some clarification? Yep. What is the legal advice that's in here?
So, I believe there's an attachment.
Yes,
there is. There's a letter that tells us something.
Oh, I see, the one pager. Well, can we exclude that?
That's what I'm just asking.
Yeah, can we? So we move a motion. No, we don't move a motion. The motion may... I'll just think about this. At the moment, we have a motion that we haven't got a mover or a seconder to that says the public be excluded from the following items. If there isn't a mover and seconder to it, could I foreshadow a motion which says... that the legal letter attached to the papers be treated as...
Non-public.
Non-public, or whatever the words are. Thank you.
Can I move that?
Yes, you can move that, Kevin.
Second.
And second it. What's his face? Oh, bloody hell, I'm having a really bad day. Andrew, thank you. All those... Yes,
I just ask a question of CE, please.
Yes, dear.
And that is, can you give us... Is there any reason that we haven't noticed... that we should be in public excluded?
So,
apart from the legal letter, you raised
from,
that. That's really
apart
useful.
From what we've talked about in terms of decisions you make today, you know, can be subject to court action. and that was the reason for going into public excluded, as well as the legal advice.
However,
if you're satisfied that the risk is such that you want to have a public conversation, that's entirely over to you.
So we haven't got a mover and a seconder for the main meeting, for the main resolution at the moment. What we have got is a mover and a seconder saying that they want to keep that particular fourth letter from whichever legal company it was. All those in favour of that, please say aye.
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 Aye. And against? No, carried. So that is excluded, the legal letter. And the other one means that we haven't, no one's moved or seconded, that we go private. So we are public. Okay, let's go and please take a cup of tea or gin.
Yes.